For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change,
the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking, except outside. Our group is welcome to use this room and just stay on this floor. No, there's no reason to go upstairs. At this time, if you haven't already, please silence your smoke detectors. Also, we respectfully ask that those present refrain from unnecessary moving about the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. Remember, the person next to you may actually be listening. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity. Thanks for laughing at that. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message, to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The normal format of this meeting is an open Big Book step study. We meet at 7 o'clock on every Monday night, and we go through the steps out of the Big Book. And when we get finished with that, we just finished the second half of step 12 last week, then we have a little celebration. Is there a chair open next to anybody? If you could, there's one in the back. All right. And then we have, and then there's one up front too, I believe. This is open. Oh, I'm going to go out. So we're having supper and a speaker. We want to thank everybody for coming out, and you're in for a treat. Christy has come down from Richmond to share her story with us tonight, and we're very appreciative, and I won't take up any more of your time.
Wow. Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name's Christy Ellis.
Hi, Christy.
Wow. I like that. I might say that again. I'm an alcoholic. My name's Christy Ellis. I love it. I love it. It's great to be with you lovely people. I feel like it's my responsibility to be here and share with you my experience, strength, and hope, because that's what people did for me. And so I appreciate the opportunity to share how I went from a very hopeless person to someone that has hope to actually share. And a life worth living, and it just still amazes me. My sobriety date's April 12th, 1988, so if I make it to a week from next Friday, I am amazed that I will be 25 years sober. And that's by God's grace and 12 steps that walked me out of a hell I never thought I'd get out of. Getting in the middle of the circle and the triangle, helping others, getting a home group that I participate in, and just using a sponsor, not just saying I have one, and sponsoring other women, and really doing service work. Being inconvenienced a lot, because that's what service is all about. It's not on my terms, it's on God's. And I believe that my life is what it is today because I'm willing to do those things. I have been willing since I got here because I was very desperate. And by God's grace, I have not lost that. And it's really a gift. And honestly, it's how I show my gratitude. I believe that people leave because they lose their gratitude. I really do. I believe that I've seen too many people leave this beautiful life that we have. And it's like that, you know, they've forgotten, you know, and to show their gratitude by doing what we do and forgetting why they have the life that they have. And so I'm going to share about that. And my home group is the Awakenings Group. We meet at 9:30 on Sunday mornings at Johnson Willis Hospital in Richmond, Virginia. And we read a paragraph that I really like each morning before the speaker speaks. It is an open speaker meeting. So I'm going to, would like to read that, and it'll make me feel like my home group's here. And it says, each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has actually happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women, desperately in need, will see these pages, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that they will be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. And I tell you, I must have this thing. It has just been an amazing ride. I used to lay in bed and wish my life could be a millionth of what it is now. And it's all because, you know, and thank God I fell into you guys and you showed me a way to live a life that God wanted me to have that I would have really missed out on. If I kept drinking, I'd be dead and wouldn't even be able to enjoy all this good stuff. So, and meet you lovely people. I really believe that identification is very important, because if you don't identify with me, you're not going to care about all the good stuff I got to share with you. And I believe that, you know, we really, it's that a drunk in me sees a drunk in you kind of stuff, you know, and we thought, drank, and felt the same. And circumstances might be a little different, but it's still thought, drank, and felt the same. And that's what hooked me when I came. That's when I knew I was with people that got me. And I used to hang out with people that got me, and they were doing the same thing I was doing. You know, they were drinking like me and doing alcohol enhancers and all that other crazy stuff. You know, and I like excitement, so I'm attracted to excitement too, and thrill, and I love breaking the rules. I love being rebellious. That's something that's just very natural in me. I love it still today. I just don't do it. Not as much anyway, but I don't. But I'm just wired that way, you know, and I like being with people that get me. And so I was, you know, but I didn't, I'm a seeker. You know, I've had a God-shaped hole in my soul, I believe, when I was born, and looked trying to fill that with everything but God, until you showed me that I had it within me the whole time, and you showed me how to tap into that when I got here. But I didn't know that. So I was a seeker on a mission for a long time. I was born into a wonderful family, young parents, and really gave us a great life. I'm the oldest of four. I'm the only girl. Grew up in a place called Bon Air. I used to say I was a Bonairean because I thought I had to be something. And it's just a nice place in Richmond, Chesterfield County. And I was fortunate. I'm one of these folks that was born into some really good people. My mom grew up in an alcoholic home, but she couldn't stand drinking. My dad drank, but I don't remember any consequences from it. We had just a regular middle-class family. And like I said, they were young when they had me, and then my brother 3 years later, then a brother 9, and then another brother 12 years later. And so, but I always, you know, it was that whole disconnect is what I remember a lot about. I always felt disconnected from me, you, God. I never felt connected in anything I was doing. But that doesn't mean that I, you know, on the outside, looking in, you would have thought I just really had it together, had a great life going on. I was popular, had a lot of people around me. I was very insecure inside, very inferior. I always wondered what you were thinking about me, you know, because it was very important that you were thinking about me and that you were including me. Yeah, I wanted to be included. I got to be included. And, the alcoholic mind, I know mine goes constantly, you know, and I was so worried about stuff that it would already be happening and pass me by before I realized that I'd already experienced it, you know. And that's what, you know, that happened a lot till I got here, you know, because I could just be so in my head with things. But I was very insecure, and I was a fantasy girl, still a fantasy girl of sorts, but I look more at reality today, and Alcoholics Anonymous has helped me really look at the truth. And but I played Barbies a lot. I love to play Barbies and choreograph Barbie's life, and love to, you know, just do all that. You know, I love to read books and get lost in the characters and personalize the stories. And I don't know why I did that, because I had great parents, a lot of love. You know, it was a really great home, mom that was there, you know, I mean, it was a structured household and never wanted for anything. And that just, I'll tell you that because it doesn't matter what, you know, I think that families can influence how you think and help create crazy ideas in you. But I'm alcoholic because I have a phenomenon of craving, and that it's the way I react to alcohol is why I'm alcoholic. You know, it doesn't matter about where I came from, you know, but I came from real good people. You know, and if I, you know, the book talks about, you know, if I could have just, you know, lived up to those moral and philosophical things, I would just have tried to so much, and I couldn't. I always let myself down and them down, and so I just couldn't do it, even though I had great examples. And so I was a very insecure person, joined everything, wanted to do it, didn't want to practice, that kind of stuff. I'm just trying to set the frame of way I thought, you know, and I believed in God, I've never disbelieved in God. I'll say that up front. You know, I always knew God was there. He was never a mean God to me. There became a point where I walked away because I didn't feel like I was living a life that deserved to have any good in it. And, we moved into a new home when I was 12, and I was kind of goody-goody then, but I've always been a very outgoing person. I was one of the people that I'd always stay and write. I would not talk in class. All the time, chewing gum, getting in trouble, that kind of stuff. It was attention. Y'all know that. I mean, I was always in the middle of it, you know, and never had the, you know, I feel like I was fortunate that I've always never been a shy person. And I feel like that God gives us different gifts, and that's one thing he did give me is I have the ability to stand up and talk and not really get too wacky about it. And but I think we all have gifts, and that AA wants it. That's another thing that Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me. It's put me in touch with the things that God wants me to do and the things that I'm able to do and so that I can help others. But when I was 13 years old, I went to a different school. It was a lot of craziness going on. This is where I got real drawn to the Peace, Love, Dove, sitting around the flagpoles chanting. I loved the rock and roll, Jimi Hendrix, Led Zeppelin, all that stuff. It was very appealing to me. I loved the hippie clothes. I loved all the stuff. I just missed Woodstock by a few years. I'm 56, and I wasn't old enough to go then. I think I was, I think it was in 69, wasn't it? So I was born in 57, so I was only 12. But I would have gone if I'd been old enough. Even now, I find people in AA that have been, and I'm like, tell me about it, you know, let me hear about it. And I just love that stuff, you know. But when I was 14, I took my first drink with the girl that we went up to a Safeway International, asked somebody to buy it for us, and you know, she said, hey, let's go get some wine. I said, okay. You know, if somebody else wasn't thinking of it, I was thinking of it. It was something I'd never done. And, you know, I'd already learned how to smoke cigarettes in the girls' bathroom and, you know, sitting in front of the, you know, French inhaling and blowing smoke rings to make sure you look cool when you do it. You know, that kind of stuff. I already got that down. And so now let's get into the drinking. And I like things that make me feel different. We used to do a lot of crazy stuff even before I took a drink, going to pajama parties and fainting ourselves. You know, I remember doing that crazy hyperventilating that's not safe. I mean, it's really not safe. And it's not. And, you know, and people would tell, you know, we'd do swinging statue in the front yard. And so we get so dizzy and we just laugh. And I thought, little did I know down the road, I wasn't going to be laughing when I was feeling that way because I'd been good at drinking. But because the spins aren't funny. I mean, and we know that. But anyway, that night I took, we went and got the wine and brought it back. And it was Boone's Farm strawberry wine. I don't even know if you can call that alcohol, but it was. That was the only time I ever drank it, you know. And I've heard lately, I keep hearing these people that had the same first drink. I see heads, Bob and Mark, you had it too, right? You know, and so it's like, it's funny how that was just like one of the very first drinks, you know. So we connect in every way. And so we did that, and I didn't dance on tables, pass out, throw up, have anything profound happen, except the fact that it set off something inside of me, and it felt good, and it was fun, and I thought, oh, I like the way this is feeling. I bet more would be better, because two of my favorite words are more and free. So I said, I like to do this some more. So I was looking around for all the people that did it, and I'm good at meeting everybody. And I joined stuff I don't even want to join just so I can make sure I'm invited everywhere. So that's what I did and went through high school doing a lot of that stuff. Now, also, something else happened to me when I hit that age, and my parents were looking at me like, what's happened to our child? Because I really hadn't done a whole lot of, you know, I was just a kid that played Barbies and played the piano and joined, and I was a Girl Scout and went to camp and did all those just kind of all-American little things. And then when I hit 13, it was like such a 180. They were probably, where's my kid? Very loving and tolerant people, I got to tell you. Really good people. I mean, that's one thing I'll give my mom, and she just let us, you know, kind of have our experience. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, we had structure and consequences, but I was impressed by that, you know, she'd let me go to concerts on a school night and For $5, go to the Coliseum and see Alice Cooper hang himself on stage. I mean, that was cool, you know, and getting trashed, you know, and sneaking alcohol in. They didn't check your pocketbooks. They didn't check anything, you know. And I know girls, we had funny ways of sneaking stuff in, and I don't know. It was just, you know, I mean, your clothes would look a little different when you went in than when you left, because we have hiding places. And just the craziness of it, and you could take something somebody passed you, and it was safe. That sounds weird, but it was safe to do that stuff back then. You weren't going to jump off a building or, you know, end up in a coma somewhere. It was just all in the name of peace, love, dove. Let's have fun. Why can't everybody just get along, you know? And it was just that good. You know, I just love that stuff. And but guys, you know, men, I don't know why we're such a part of the solution to me. I don't understand it. But a lot of women do. Y'all, I know y'all, a lot of y'all had that experience. And I know men, it was probably the same for women. And really what it was human power. You know, it was human power. God-shaped hole stuff. You know, I want to fill that God-shaped hole up with people. And I was filling out with the other stuff. And when I drank, everything made sense. Everything made sense. I was more comfortable. You know, I didn't care. I'd do anything and then some. Stuff I didn't need to be doing. Anything looked good. You know, the sky's the limit. Any ideas look good, you know, and I did it just in the name of, I drank for the effect, plain and simple. By the time I graduated from high school, I decided I did want to go to college, and so I applied late, as I was good at doing to my family, and my parents once again stepped in, and they sent me, I picked Radford College, it's university now, because it was a party school. That was criteria. And so I went there, and I thought I had arrived. You know how Bill talks about that. That was an arrival point for me, because I got there. I could do what I want when I wanted. Didn't have to worry about any structure. Not that I was held any big thing, but it was just nice being my own boss. And the only thing I cared about was, where's the student center? Because I know they got beer. And lots of guys, because that was the first year the guys were at Radford. And Tech was only 30 minutes away. So it was a lot of partying. I went on my parents' scholarship, because they paid for it. And I lasted 6 months, 2 quarters, because I didn't really go to class. So if you don't go to class, they ask you to leave. But what happened to me there, every time I made a change in my life, my drinking changed. And when I was there, the blackout drinking started. I started doing things that, you know, having a lot of consequences that started affecting me about how I felt about myself. That God-shaped hole in me got bigger. I started, like, being embarrassed to see certain people because of things I was doing. I didn't want them to tell me what I did the night before, even though people like telling you, because some of it wasn't really that cute. They thought it was, but I didn't. I got in a lot of dangerous situations, you know, waking up in places with people I don't know. I don't even know where I am. And I get to know the security guard guys that have to let you in your dorm on a first-name basis, because I'm always having to be let in. So it was a big party to me. It was just one big party. But the blackout drinking started, and so when I left, this was one of first times of saying, I'm going to go back one day. You know, so I started creating loose ends, and that's what I call them. You know, all these loose ends, because when I got to you guys, I had lots of loose ends, things that I hadn't finished, things that I needed to take care of, people that I needed to make amends to, you know, bills, everything. They were all loose ends, eating me alive like a piranha, and that was a loose end. I didn't finish school. I had gotten away from doing things that I loved as a teenager. I used to be a camp counselor and for underprivileged kids. I loved helping others. I've always been drawn to that. All that stuff gets pushed aside, all in the name of the party, the alcohol, the way I feel. I've got to feel better. I've got to go over here. I really want to be over here, but yeah, I can push that over here and go over here right now. I was really good at anything that happened to me. I would pretend some other girl did it. So I did. In my head, I could literally act like it was another person. And you could be saying you did the same thing, and I could be going, oh, you know, like, poor you. And I'm feeling like that made me feel better about myself. And I've done the same thing. And that's very arrogant, superior, but it's also very inferior and sad, because I was feeling so low about myself. Now, that's a person, I'm feeling that way, and I come from all that love. So air disease is just getting bigger and bigger, and it's making me need more. And so when I left college, I came home. I moved in with a high school friend. It didn't work out. Then I moved in with my cousin, and she was getting a divorce. And I was like, oh, good. Now I have somewhere I can go. We can go have some fun. Now I'm so selfish, I'm not thinking, oh, that's too bad. I'm sorry, your marriage is falling apart. You know, I'm selfish, you know, and I'm just thinking, wow, this is cool. I've got somewhere, you know, we're going to have some fun. And it's all about drinking, you know. So then my drinking changed, started going to bars. And Fanny's and some other bars up there. And so we start doing that. And I'm, you know, I'm working and I'm going out every night. Every now and then I'd stay home. And I'd eat a piece of cheese every now and then to make myself feel like I'm getting some nutrition. And, you know, I'm smoking cigarettes and just going to bars, meeting guys, creating havoc everywhere, not treating you guys very nice. And that's all in the name of I got to feel better and I'm sorry, but I got to do it anyway, you know. And we know that, you know. I know that it's sad because it really going through, just tearing through people's lives. And I was only, you know, 18, 19 years old then. And I didn't get sober till I was 30. And so, but the bar drinking started, and I started doing a lot of that crazy stuff that we do, you know, taking shots before you go out, thinking it's going to decrease how much money you spend, but you know, you just get drunk earlier in the evening and do stupider things early in the evening. But I still drank till I passed out. You know, I still kept going. And everybody else was ready to go home. I'm like, what are you talking about? It's 4 a.m, got to be at work in a couple hours. Let's just stay up. You know, and there, you know, it made sense at the time, you know, but I'm going into my job and they're saying things about how I'm looking, and I would get so insulted that they could even think that I didn't look good, you know, and it's like, you know, and when I'd shudder to think about the way I did look a lot of times, but I would just get highly insulted when people told me the truth, and so I just wouldn't talk to them anymore. And I take my ball and go home, and I don't want to play with you because you're telling me the truth. And so, but I had this, you know, I was one of these people that went out on relationships. I really didn't date people. I mean, when I got with people, it was like, I'm together, you know, and I'm thinking about what our kids are going to look like, you know. And I'm 15, 16 doing that crazy stuff, you know, and everything is a love affair, you know, because I'm such a romantic. You know, and I just want to feel good, you know, I just want to feel better, you know, so I threw myself into everything that I did, you know, 100%, like we do, 0 to 60, you know, and then I could change my mind like that, and my friends would go, I thought you really liked him, I know, I'm like him, you know, and it's like, and I no wonder people were going, what the heck, you know, this girl, but that's just the way I was, you know, if it wasn't doing the job, then I went to something else, and with the alcohol, I started trying to control it when I was at college. And you can't control grain alcohol. Let's just face the facts here. You just can't. You drink grain, it gets you. You know, it just gets you. So I definitely had the phenomenon of craving and the mental obsession even at that early age of the drinking. So I definitely drank alcoholically. I like the way the book talks about it, that we are people that drank for the effect. You know, and that's it. And I did. I could, half of it, I hated the way it tasted, but I loved where I was going with it. And so anyway, long and the short of it is that I met this guy, because you know there's always a guy up in there. And you know, guys, you know, God has always been giving me information my whole life. He really has. And when I got here, I could see the info. I can make decisions based on truth because God gives me the information and I see it. Because if I'm grounded in this program, I have peripheral vision and I can see him. I can hear him through you. I can see what he wants me to go, where he wants me to go. But then it's like so tunnel vision. I'm so focused on what I think, and the key word I think my life should be like, that I can't hear or see any of that stuff. And if I do, I discount it because I think I know better. For some reason, I think I know better. And so that's how I left God. Because I didn't have faith anymore. Because if I didn't know what was going to happen, I wasn't doing it. And sometimes it would even be something I didn't like that much, but I still knew it was going to happen because I didn't have faith. And so I thought, you know, I met this guy, and he was a guy that God had given me a whole lot of info about. And I mean, in junior high school, he got kicked out of school, and, you know, from the school system, then kicked out of Fishburne Military Academy, then he went in the Army, and I met him, and I just thought I was something, dating a guy in the Army, running down the road between Fort Monroe and Richmond, and I really just thought that was something, that I had this Army guy, and he went to Germany and asked me to marry him in letters, and I just, oh my gosh, I'd get drunk and call people and tell the story over and over and over, you know, and I just thought I was something. And my parents planned this beautiful wedding, and it was wonderful. And right before the invitation was supposed to go out, now this is big to me. When I thought about it, when I got sober, I thought, man, a captain over in Germany calls me this little girl over in Richmond, Virginia, that's going to marry this guy. He must have done something pretty bad and said, you might not want to marry this guy. Now, that's a lot of info coming from a captain in the army over in Germany. But y'all know what I said. I said, what do you know? I know best. So we reordered the invitations, changed the wedding date, and married him anyway. And so that's, you know, and that's just it, you know, and that's the way my life went. And so for the next 5.5 years, we were married. We had 3 beautiful children out of that marriage. I got married at 21, had a daughter at 22, a son at 23, and a son at 25. And at 26, we split up. Those years were filled with a lot of drinking. Every time I got pregnant, and for some reason, I could quit. I could still stop because I was pregnant. It was a good enough reason for me to stop. But I would drink right at when I could. The marriage was not good. He loved smoke pot. I used to love guys like that, long-haired guys with no jobs and no license that just used to sit around and smoke pot all the time. I used to love those kind of guys. They're just kind of like, ooh, zenning out, you know. And I did. I still think they're kind of cool. But he really did. So it was really crazy. And honestly, we were doing the best we could. And I think I loved him best I could. And I had 3 beautiful children. I just want to be a good mama. But I became a very sad girl because I started drinking because I was unhappy and because the home life wasn't good. And we were living really nice. We were able to buy a house at that early age. He made good money because he worked for his dad. And so we were living a good life. And unfortunately, yeah, I mean, you never know what goes on behind closed doors. And alcohol does things to people differently. And he was a very violent person. And I'd never been around yelling and screaming and all that stuff. I just didn't grow up around that. So it was like, scared me. I thought, oh my God, this, what have I done? You know, it's going to be my wife. And I got these 3 small children and I was terrified. And they were 4, 3, and 1 when we did split up when I was 26. And by then I was drinking a lot. I was drinking from morning to night, usually drinking beer all day, lost a lot of weight, scared to death. Prior to that, you know, there were a lot of nights of me standing at the window watching the headlights, wondering, is that him? Is that him coming home? Is that him coming home? I was I was already becoming a prisoner within myself and very sad and very young when I think about 26 years old with 3 small children like that. I mean, I look at my children and my kids are 33, 32, and 30. And I think, wow, you know, I think about, you know, I got sober when I was 30. You know, my baby just turned 30 yesterday. And I just look at him, I go, hmm. And so I was a very sad girl and I loved the music, you know, so I would just play a lot of good rock that would be like Beat It from Michael Jackson or Borderline by Madonna and all that stuff, you know, and I'm just drinking and singing songs, throwing his stuff out on the thing. And I like drama, you know, we like drama. Anyway, we did end up splitting up, sadly. And so I, you know, moved into an apartment and started, you know, the bar drinking again. There was a young girl that moved in underneath us and, you know, I'm good at zeroing in on solutions. And she was 16 and she became a babysitter that I will forever, ever be grateful to that young girl because she really helped me a lot with those kids because I was so mixed up and so sad and such a really just lost person. I really was lost. And her name was Jennifer, and I'll never forget, you know, she just really helped me a lot with those kids. And I had neighbors. You know, God always put people around me, you know, and I look back. I'm so grateful I could, and I'd love to find some of them. And a few of them have come in my path years into recovery, and that's been really cool. And just to, wow, just be able to talk to them and make amends to them and hug them and thank them for being there. And because he's always had some people around that helped me walk through things. And of course, my parents, though. I've always been there. But anyway, so then my cousin, I called her and said, well, let's go. You know, I've moved in here we need to go up to Cimarron Rose. And that was this old bar up there. And it was Pickup City USA. And it's a daycare now, which is very appropriate. But I think, you know, when I walked in there, you know, I think sick attracts sick, you know, and I was very sick. I was a very sick girl. I think I had it on my forehead, come get me, I'll fall for any line, and I did. And so I met this guy that was had felt like he'd been wronged too. And so, you know, we connected and, oh, we were made for each other, you know, and it was like I went out on another relationship, 3.5 years. You know, we met that night, and next 3.5 years, we were together, and things went to another level. I was at such a sad point in my life. I'll sum up those. I'll take you right up to right before I got sober. the next few years were really, I got to a low that I pray God I never would ever be at again. You know, the truth is I just wanted to be a good mom. I love those babies like nobody's business. But those babies, you know, as much as I wanted to get sober, I couldn't because I had alcoholism. You know, I couldn't get sober for those babies. But I wanted to. I just wanted to be a good mom. So I'd do things like, well, I had a lot of jobs, you know. And you always know when they get ready to let you go, so you leave. You know, you just know. Somehow you just know. But I mean, I wanted credit for showing up for 8 hours doing the job they were paying me for. You know, and I just needed, and I used to think how indignant. But then I thought, no, I just wanted somebody to acknowledge I was doing something right. You know, because I really wasn't living my life right. And this guy introduced me to a whole bunch of stuff and that I had never done before. Because, you know, when you're in that state of mind, and we all know it, that desperate place that, you know, where we're drinking a lot and other things look attractive. And I got involved in other things, too. And I broke the law and I put my kids in situations I didn't need to put them in. And all in the name of I hate myself. And I hated myself with a passion, and I was stealing from my family, lived with my parents 4 different times. They took me in and with the kids, and I'm lying and stealing and leaving for days on end. And my brother's 17, and he won't even eat in the kitchen because, he'd eat in his room because he didn't want to be around me. And I'd steal money out of his room because that he was trying to save for his insurance. And, you know, I was just doing that kind of stuff. I'd steal from anybody in my life, and I really had become everything that I hated. That last year before I got sober, the last 6-8 months, I got arrested a couple times. And even, you know, the detectives were asking me stuff like, why, what are you doing this? And I was like, I didn't know. I just couldn't even, I didn't have social skills. I was so empty inside. I couldn't have had a conversation with you if I wanted to. You know, I wouldn't look anybody in the eye because I just hated myself that much. And I didn't know. I just really didn't know. I was very lost. And I would take my kids in Toys R Us and say, buy yourself a $20 toy just so I could feel like a good mom for like 1 minute. You know, I just wanted to feel like a good mama. You know, and I was crying all the time and just drinking, and drinking really wasn't working. That nothing was working because it just seemed like I was just spiraling out of control. And that prison within myself was huge. And I got this last job. And these people there, and you'll know what they were doing when I tell you, started telling me about this treatment center that their loved ones were going to. And I was like, huh, what's nice, you know. And inside of me, you know, I was kind of listening, but they were telling their experience, you know. And I think about how cool that was. There's God again for you, Sharon, showing me a way out, you know, because I honestly felt like that I was going to have to drink the rest of my life or die. And being at my parents that last time, and I know my parents were sick of, you know, the phone ringing and not knowing what was going to be on the other end of the phone. You know, is she in jail? You know, where is she? Is she in some part of town? We got to go pick her up, and it's dangerous and putting them in harm's way. I mean, I stole a lot from my family, and I'm not saying just money. I stole emotions, nights of sleep, and love. I stole, those were much bigger than the money that I, and the stuff that I did with the finances. I stole their emotions. And I missed a lot of things, my brother's graduation. I'd always tell people I'll be there. And something always came up, I didn't go. And so those are some more, you know, that's a lot of the loose ends that I could talk to you about. You know, I had a lot of loose ends. I just, the thing is, I didn't want to be that person, but I didn't know what else to do. I didn't know anything about solutions. And the way I felt, I was so uncomfortable in my skin. I just had to constantly be putting something in me to make it through the next minute or two, you know, and just to, and it just was horrible. And I was so desperate. And so I'm at that job, and they're telling me about St. John's Hospital and God, you know, so many things happened all through there. I can't remember. And I got rid of the guy right there before then, which was one of the best things I ever did. And I didn't want anybody around me. I went in a bar one night, and I remember sitting there, and it's surrender. Just, it took over a period of time. It brought me to my knees, all these different things that were happening to me. And one of them, you know, I was sitting there, and I didn't want anybody to talk to me when I was drinking. I just want people to leave me alone, you know. And I had written on a piece of paper and said, get help. And I found that piece of paper like about 10 years ago in an old pocketbook or something. And I still got it, and I thought, wow, I remember that night. I remember that, just that way I was feeling, that sadness, that overwhelming, just that terror and that remorse and everything that I was feeling from the way my life was going. And right around there, that was going on. I got in trouble with the law, and my parents told me I had to leave. because they couldn't do it anymore. And God knows they hung in there a long time. But you know, it's one of the best things they could have done. Said, get out. They weren't helping. I mean, they said, we'll watch the kids. Like, that was something different. But, you know, we'll watch the kids. You know, we'll do this. We just can't. And I asked Mom about it later, you know, after I've been sober a while. And she said, Chrissy, we just didn't know what else to do. And I said, well, thank God you did. You know, because you really helped me. Because we don't get better when people enable us and let us off the hook and buy and co-sign our stuff. That's why people don't realize when they're new, we're not telling them stuff to be mean. We're doing it because we don't want to see them die. You know, and I was dying, you know, and my mom, thank God, they saw, you know, that they just couldn't do anymore and that I needed to go. So I was gone for about a week and got word to come back. And she said, you know, you can come home, but you got to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know where she heard that from. I don't know that anybody ever went to Alcoholics Anonymous in my family. But, and I asked her some years later, and she said she doesn't know. I said, God whispered it in her ear. Something happened. And so I was just willing enough. I just wanted to get back in the house with the kids because I just missed them so much. And I just wanted to be in safe surroundings because I was so lost. And so I came home and I agreed to go to a meeting. And that's why, you know, I spent this time talking about the you know, what it was like and what happened, because the identification that I heard was the same thing I heard in that meeting when I went there that night. And I hooked in with that. I heard people describing how I'm feeling inside, and I didn't even know who they were. And that touched me. I mean, because you're my people. You get me. I didn't know that then, but I was so touched by that. And it just got my attention, and we need to get people's attention. And that's how we get their attention, you know, talking about that stuff. And so I didn't pick up a chip. I didn't do anything, but it did something. You know, it's like, God, you know, I heard enough where I wanted to hear it again. And of course, my alcoholism starts running its mouth, you know, how it does. And it's saying, it's just the way it was at that night. So I went to another one and I saw it again. And it's hope. That's what I saw. Language of the heart, hope. And I'm so grateful for that. And I tell you, that is, it's so important that that be present in a meeting. It's so important that people can hear that. I just am so, just because I just know what it did for me, because I was a girl that I felt like was unreachable, and it reached me. It touched a part. It opened me enough where I could hear that. And so that happened, and I went, you know, and I had, those people had been telling me about St. John's Hospital, and I made a call out there and answered all the questions that I said yes to, and they said, you need to come over here now. And I was like, whoa, you know, and only a drunk will say, I'll do anything. And, well, let me think about it, you know. And it's like, you know, I'm desperate. Well, I got to look at that. I don't know. I got something I got to do, you know. And I mean, it's so funny how we are, but it was fear. You know, I was scared. It's like I wanted help. And the truth of the matter is, I was done, but I didn't know I was done. That's why I think it's so important when you ask people, are you done? You know, if they hesitate, they ain't done. But if they go, I'm done, you know, they're ready. You know, because that willingness, you just can't give them that. Wish you could. We talked about that right up. Leah, thank you for driving with me. One of my girls came, and we did step work driving on up the road. Isn't that cool? And, you know, before I got sober, what I thought, what? But, yeah, it was cool. Very cool. Great way to just come in here and see all you lovely folks. And we were talking about step one, which is so appropriate. But anyway, so all that's going on, and in God's mercy, he showed me what I looked like one day when I was at work. I had a moment of clarity. I'd had a lot of them, but I really saw what I looked like, and I didn't even recognize myself. I was like, oh my gosh, who is that? And I'm praying to God to please help me. And I'd done a lot of praying before when things were going on, and I wanted a way out quick, you know, so I called on it on my convenience, but this was a desperate prayer. I'm dying. I need help. Please help me. And on April 11th, 1988, I woke up that morning, and something was different. And, you know, Bill Wilson talks about spiritual awakening is the greatest gift we get. It's in Language of the Heart, one of my favorite books. Read it. If you're not familiar with it, it's all the compilation of Bill Wilson's writings. It's got the history, traditions, the amazing stuff, and that's in there. And I remember reading that, and I thought, oh, my gosh, that's what happened. And he said, we must awake or we die. And I awoke, and something, and a power greater than myself, who I call God, lifted me up, and I knew that it's almost like I intuitively knew I had a little window, and I went into my job, and I said, I'm dying, I need to take a leave of absence, and I don't care if I lose my job. And I called St. John's Hospital, and I said, I'll be out there tonight if y'all have a bed, and they did. Called my mom, and I said, I'm going. My parents are crying. I go home. I get my stuff together. My brother that couldn't stand eating in the room with me drove me out there. I think he was thinking, thank you, God. Get this girl out of this house. He got to keep my car, too, for a month. So I think that was the least that kid could have. He threw 10 bucks in my hand and ran for the hills. Anyway, and that was an awakening that I had. And in that reading, it also follows up, and it says that it has to be followed up with action. You know, you can awake all day long, but if you don't do anything, because it's about action. It's about putting legs on it. It's about doing something different. You know, I used to promise a lot and say I'm going to do a lot, and nothing changed because I won't do anything. But it's all about putting legs on it. But I woke up, you know, April 12th, 1988, and it still blows my mind that I did not want to drink. And all that crazy drinking and all that other stuff I was doing, I was just like, whoa. I mean, I was just amazed. And I had a very positive treatment experience. I really am grateful for the treatment facility committees, and because they bring meetings in and they share, you know, alcoholics sharing with us, and they have the meetings. I think it's so important, and they did that there. This treatment center took us out to meetings in Richmond, so I got to know people there. And I met a lot of folks that I still know today, I'm happy to report. But I had a good experience in the respect that I learned how to eat. I gained some weight. I was like 30 pounds underweight. I did not look good. I realized that I did not look good when I really saw what I looked like when I got there. And I learned how to eat 3 meals a day. And that's important, get physically sober, you know. And you can't think right when you're not feeding your body. I mean, I was already feeding it with all other stuff. And I told you what my philosophy of eating was, the piece of cheese and stuff like that every now and then, and smoking cigarettes like a freight train. But my parents brought the kids to see me after I'd been there a couple weeks, and even my kids were looking at me different. You know, it was really cool. It was really cool. I can still remember that. I just had a really, really good experience. I remember them telling us, 1 out of 10 of y'all gonna make it. I said, well, I'll be seeing y'all later because I'm making it. You know, I'm telling you, an old timer told me early sobriety, he said, Christy, the minute you're willing to change, you've already started changing. And I'm telling you, when I could actually wake up and not want to drink, man, I will live. And I have done this thing. It's the only thing in my life I've ever done consistently. And just, I want to live, plain and simple, guys. I know it will kill me. It almost did. You know, I will die if I drink. And I'm saying that here, as long as I've been sober, I don't have any thing where I think it's changed. The longer I'm sober, the more I realize I don't know. And that's the good news. You know, but I went through that, and then I left, and I lost my job, and then the court, they put that stuff on the side, and I think, you know, everything got put on hold, and I just focused on one day at a time. And so what I did was I went to meetings every day. I got up early in the morning at my mom's house and participated in my life. I was a single mom with 3 kids. They're 8, 7, and 5. So I participated in my life, and I got busy living my life. And I said, I want to feel like you look. And I said, what do I got to do? And they said, get a sponsor. So I did. Get a home group. So I did. Get a job in your home group. So I did. And I believe coffee making and setting up chairs and greeting is the best job in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't care what. Today, I've done a lot of stuff through the years. That is my favorite thing. And when I travel, I still walk around and say, hey, there, buddy. And I'm sorry we got here a little later than I planned, or I would have hugged everybody. I will hug you before I leave, and I will shake people's hands, and they'll be like, wow, is this your home group? I'll say, I ain't never even been here before, you know, but that's what y'all taught me. Reach out, feel more connected in, and that helped me. I didn't realize, you know, I'm standing there greeting people, and I realized, you know, how, you know, if you want to be a part of, make yourself a part of. You know, if you want something to be different, then do something different. You know, and I was fortunate. I had some really strong people, and I fell into a busy home group. And it was awesome. And I was a GSR at a year sober. And so meanwhile, during that, I started going through these beautiful steps. Those steps that transformed my life. 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. To me, the transformation that happens as a direct result of it is amazing to me. You know, and the powerlessness and unmanageability I had no problem with. But, you know, we were talking at, I have a book study twice a month at my house with a lot of the girls that I sponsor come over. And I don't think you can ever go through the steps enough. You know, personally, I grow every time I do it. You know, and someone told me, you want to stay in the steps? Take people through the steps. I grow more doing that, you know, because I'm going through it right with them. And we were talking about that second step and just about, to me, how it's just about willingness. And it's like setting me aside and setting what I believe aside and any prejudices I have aside. And am I willing to believe this thing will work for me? Am I willing to believe the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous will restore me to sanity? And through that process, find God in a way I never dreamed possible, from my head to my heart. I never knew that. It was in me the whole time, you know? And we were talking about that, how powerful that is. And it's all about trust, you know, and how that faith has gone through the years and become reliance as a direct result of the experiences that I've had. You know, my experiences are what helped me have that belief go into trust. You know, I believed you until I believed me, because I had to believe that you believed. And that, you know, and that's what I tell my girls, because that's what I was told. But I got busy in those steps and the transformation happened, and I don't have time to go through them, because all of them, because I'm going to highlight a few. But know this, those steps to me, are a map out of hell. You know, and they put me face to face with myself for the first time in my life. And I was able to look at that girl I pretended did that other stuff. You know, and I was able to take responsibility for my actions and to realize that I set the ball rolling most times. It also, what happened for me is when I sat down and shared it, I shared at a level I'd never shared with another individual in my life. I became free in a way that I never thought I could ever be free. You know, and it says in there that we need to share all for it to have a permanent effect. All our stories. That's a take it to the grave stuff. You know, finding out the person that I'm sitting across from has similar stories, that I'm not unique. But that what happened for me, that sharing at that level for me was, little did I know it would set me up to share with other people in my life that way. That I had nothing between me and you anymore, and me and God, and me and me. That was the disconnect the whole time. I didn't even realize that. You know, and it's that whole disconnect. And channel could be open so that God could actually, you know, reach me, and that he could use me, because they're removing all that stuff that's blocking me. I had no clue that's what that was about. And actually being able to see patterns of behavior and why I was the way I was, and that it could change and be different, and I asked him to remove them because he knows best. You know, by then, in third step, I made a decision to, you know, turn my will and my life over to him. So if I'm making that decision, and I jump into 4 through 9 to put that into action, I need to act like I believe God's in charge. You know, and that's something that of course it's practice, whole thing's about practice. We know that. I already told you practice is not one of my favorite things to do, but it's about practice. I wanted to live, so it became a part of my life, you know. But being able to sit across from a person like that, to be able to talk about my life, to be able to look at character defects that I had and really identify them and go, oh, that's what I was doing? Wow, you mean I don't have to stay like this? Thank God, you know, and thank God literally, you know, or a higher power, whatever you choose to, you know, call your higher power. And to be able to sit across some people that I had harmed and make amends, to be able to look at people in the eye and to make an amends. And really, I had to really learn, what is an amends? It's not a polite gesture like, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. I used to always be really good telling everybody I'm sorry all the time. You know, I'm sorry I did that. And that was just for me to pave the way so you would be nice to me. But really making an amends with a sincere desire to right a wrong. And not only for the past, but for the future. Because the future could be different as a direct result of the amends. With no expectation, of course. And it's been very powerful for me to be able to do that. When I first got sober, I got this lump sum of money. I had had a car accident in 86 when someone slammed in the back of me. And I thank God the kids weren't with me. I just dropped them off. But it didn't settle till then. And my parents spent a lot of money on me. They paid my bills a lot. They bailed me out of jail. They did a lot. I owed them money. And I asked my sponsor, and I said, we do the steps in order, but I got this money, and I don't think it's safe for me to have all this money, you know, because I told you, y'all know we like, you know, I don't need all that money. I get all excited. And so anyway, I said, Mom, you know, what's a good amount of money I can give y'all to make an amends for, you know, and I was able to give them a nice little bit of money, and that felt good. And I was also, you know, treating them different, doing the whole, you know, showing them through my actions for my gratitude. That's what I talked about, you know, living grateful, showing gratitude to people because they've done a lot for me. I still get to show them now. But they left me enough money because, believe it or not, cell phones were not out in 1988 and answer machines were just coming out. How about that? And they were big and they had little tapes in them. And at one point, they didn't even have codes that you can call and get it. You did wait till you got home. And see all the little blinks and get all excited because people had called, you know. And nobody had been calling me for a long time. I was excited. And they weren't bill collectors, thank God, because I was paying my bills. But because I didn't pay my bills. See, when I got here, no credit because I threw my bills in the trash because I wasn't going to pay them anyway. You know, so, I mean, you know, I had those more loose ends. And the amends help us with the loose ends, you know. And so, you know, 10, 11, and 12 to me are about living in today. You know, 10 helps me take care of the loose ends during the day. You know, they really do. And I just love being able to say, oh, my gosh, I made a mistake. Let me fix it. I apologize. And people sit there going, wow. And I thought, what a gift that is to be able to do that. So I don't have to walk around with it eating me alive and bugging me and how am I going to handle it. And there's another loose end. And it's just a boulder, you know, we carry around. And boy, I just think we're so blessed to have that. You know, and I'm just, again, being very brief when I'm going over because I want to share a couple stories with you to tell you about through the years and then now because I don't want to forget about now. Which is easy to do when you can, you know, talking. But you know, in 11, you know, the 11 step has changed a lot for me through the years. But the bottom line is the 11 step probably is one of the most important steps in my life because, you know, that God consciousness is just so important. And it is, you know, waking up in the morning and asking God to direct my thinking is so key for me. I have an extremely busy life and one that I treasure. And I want my feet on the ground and I want to make decisions based on God and not Christy. You know, I don't like to wake up with the I got us, which is easy to do when I got a busy life. You know, I can wake up, I can do this, I can do that. You know, and it's like, be quiet, be still, you know, ask God to direct your thinking. You know, if you got something going on, look over the day, see if you need help with something, ask him to help you with it. You know, be still and ask for his will in your life. And sometimes I'll do a little reading and sometimes I'll just be really still and just ask for his will because I want his will. It works out a lot better. And it's just key for me. It's very grounding. And then 12, of course, the beautiful practice these principles in all our affairs. And those are the stories I want to share with you. Are going to illustrate how these steps have, you know, taken it home and into work and everything, how we affect other people's lives. You know, and having the awakening as the result, I say the result, because so many, I'll be taking people through the steps and they're like, man, I'm at the third step. I'm not feeling any different. I've said, honey, it says the result at 12. Be at 3, you know, and then we go to 4. But that's, you know, because we want it. Sadly, some people give up before they, you know, they don't trust the process. You know, and if you're struggling with that, trust the process. God's got the clock. He's got the time, you know, the plan for you. And I believe he's got a plan for all of us. And I just got to trust it's got to happen in his time. And I don't want it 1 minute sooner because I don't have a good picker. You know, I pick people that aren't good for me. You know, I pick jobs that aren't good for me. And that's just me trying to run my show. That's me thinking I know best. So anyway, so what happened to me over through the years? So I started rebuilding my life with my kids. Y'all told me to take God to work with me, take him everywhere with me. So I did. I'd open the car door and say, come on, God, let's go to work. And I did that kind of stuff. I'm real weird like that because I didn't want to lose this gift. You know, y'all told me it and I did it. You know, I got involved in service. I would, you know, they said there's a committee meeting on XYZ, I was there. You know, I took my kids to meetings and they colored in the room while we went. You know, we didn't have babysitting meetings back then, but who cared? I wanted to be sober. I went to a lot of meetings, stuck my hand out, got 3 women's phone numbers. I made myself do that when I first got sober and I made myself call those women to make myself reach out and get more. I wasn't this social person I am right now. When I first got here, I had to relearn that. You know, rituals. One of my favorite speakers says rituals, that word is in the word spiritual, and it makes sense. You know, this is about rituals. It's about practicing. It's about doing things over and over and over, you know, and it's about living this life. And so what I did was I got busy going to meetings and just, like, threw myself into it. Now, I was also a good mama. Y'all showed me how to do it all. You know, it's not an either or. I'm an alcoholic. I found sobriety. If I don't have that, I can't be a good mama. I'm not even going to be alive. So I had to take care of my sobriety and work with a sponsor, you know, and then sponsor people. And I started going into prisons when I was 9 months sober. Favorite service work's going in the prison, sitting with a bunch of women in a room trying to stay sober. And I said, that's all we are for the next hour. And I see some of my buddies in here that love to do that stuff, Miss Tula. And I just, you know, so I got busy, really busy living this beautiful life and growing. And I got a job that believed in giving people second chances. I had to go to court when I was a year sober. And I had changed so much, they didn't even recognize me when I got there. And I had to talk to the judge, and I told, he said, what have you been doing the last year? And I said, God, give me the words. I had 3 minutes. I had all these people from my parents and AA and everybody in there. And the prosecution even said that they were impressed with my candor about what I'd been doing. And y'all had taught me, be honest about where we've gone. You know, I was honest about what I had done and what I'd been doing. And the prosecution commented on it, so I didn't get anything. You know, and it was 20 years hanging over my life for these stuff I had been doing. So God, you know, had other plans. And I really believe it was going in the prisons from the outside and carrying the message. And I don't ever question it. If it happens, I'm like, okay, let me just keep going and keep doing what I'm doing one day at a time. And so my children and I, we built a life together. And you said, take it home. And I did. And so through the years, my kids learned how to live a principled life because you said, take it home. And they got to know my AA friends and buddies, and they grew to love you because they saw their mother transform into this person that, you know, and my kids are beautiful people. They're very special to me. And I'm going to tell you a little story about each one of them before I close, because it's really important to me that you know about these people that I've talked to you about. Through the years, I've had a lot of different jobs. I believe that I'm the sum total of what I've done. I really believe that. I think each thing has prepared me for a next part of my journey. I've gotten off track before when I thought I knew best. It didn't work, and I got back on track. You know, I do that. You know, we're restless people by nature, I think. Restless, irritable, discontented. I don't get really discontented, or maybe a little, or irritable, but, you know, I think we have we get bored easy. I don't know. I do. I have to have a job that I'm really just busy. I just think that's the way we're wired, you know, and so I just, you know, and I think, you know, learning the truth of my condition is one of the best things that I could learn about me. That it's okay. That's just how I'm wired. I'm alcoholic. Now, not to be used as an excuse for bad behavior, but to understand myself, you know, and not to freak out, oh, something's wrong with me because I'm doing this and I've been sober a while. No, that's just how we're wired, you know. And but through the years, I've done a lot of service. It started out in the group and getting busy in my home group, and then it'd been above group level for a long time, and I was able to, you know, I've done things at the state, and I'm not going to give you a resume. I'm just going to say that God has given me many opportunities, and I have done it, and I just can't imagine not doing it. I just can't, you know. I want to live in the middle of the circle and triangle. I do that with my girls. I draw it, and we talk about the three legacies, and I put a little dot in the middle, and I say, all right, now draw a line. It says, you are here, and that's where you live. You live in the middle of the circle and the triangle. My husband, Dennis, I met him in service work, and we got married to be 12 years ago in May. And he's my buddy. I wasn't looking for him, but you know, I believe that God puts people in your life when it's time. And so we got married, and it's been a great, great ride because we both love Alcoholics Anonymous. And we have an AA home. He's got 3 children. I've got 3 children. We've got 4 dogs. I told you I like quantity. And and so I just, you know, and we've had some great times, you know, because of this program and with God leading us. You know, we pretty much don't really try to tell each other what to do. I probably try sometimes. He's so laid back. He's a really laid back guy, if you know him. You know, we balance each other out. I think he slows me down, I speed him up kind of thing. But two of me would run me crazy. But so, you know, really great love. I've experienced love in a way with a friend and someone that I want to spend the rest of my life with that I, you know, just a really, really great relationship that gets better and better and better. And I never had those before. I always had relationships that were really good, and then I was always scrambling to keep them good. And because it was more lust, or it was more I'm lonely, or more just trying to fill the God-shaped hole. And I really believe that it works when God is in the middle of it. You know, I really do. And we've got 2 grandchildren. I'm happy to report. So anyway, jobs. You know, through the years, I've had a lot of different jobs. And you know, I told you I like to help others, and I believe that God puts us in positions to help others no matter where we are. The 7th step talks about being maximum service to God and our fellows. That means everybody. And that's the way it was explained to me. And so I work with the homeless today, and I get to do that. I get to be a part of people's lives in a way that is just amazing. I get to really see gratitude. I really get to, what I do is I work with all the volunteers and the donations and the fundraising and the events and stuff. So I'm the outreach person. Go out and talk about us, and we have 2 shelters in the soup kitchen in Richmond. We've got people moving out, and I get the joy of finding them things for their homes and to be right there on the front line with them. And also, more importantly, I'm in a position where people, alcoholics that haven't found us yet, will knock on the door, and what a pair of pants, because they've wet their pants. You know, and I'm in a position to say, here, let me get you a pair of jeans. Let me get you some money. Let me fill a knapsack full of stuff. And you know, and that's a far cry from that girl that, you know, was, that came here, you know, dying from this disease. I just want to be a good mom. And just, you know, I used to look at people driving to work every day, and I would have given you $1 million to be those people. You know, and am I lying? I am one of those people, you know. And, you know, and so it's really, it's awesome that God connected me back with helping others, like I always loved to do before when I was a teenager, helping those kids in the underprivileged camps. And, you know, I really believe that, you know, he just takes us there. Dennis and I lived in North Carolina from 2003 to 2005, and we had the joy of, I had my Mayberry experience is what I call it. It was really great, though, because I really got to meet some really great people we still keep up with. And we started a meeting down there, and we just had a really good time. And I knew from, you know, being here and hearing other people relocate here that all I needed to do was to go down there and share my experience, strength, and hope. And I didn't go down there with an attitude of y'all are going to be different and this isn't right and I'm not going to go, because I hear that frequently from people. And I had been listening to people that had moved, and I had always welcomed them. And I said, you know, I know it's going to be different, but we're really the same, you know. And so I knew that from my experiences of going to a lot of meetings and meeting a lot of people. So I was able to go there with a really open mind, and it keeps your mind open, I think. You know, Dennis and I traveled a lot in our early marriage, and we would travel over the United States going to meetings, and we would meet so many people, and it really does keep your mind open, because, yeah, there's some real different kind of meetings out there. But it's, you know, but one thing I've learned is that people are doing what they know. And sometimes it makes me really sad, because there is a solution here, and it's in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's all it needs to be in. You know, we don't need to add anything, take away anything. It just is what it is. You know, I think it's a beautiful solution. It works for me, and I believe that book is my answer, and I will continue to just read that book and use that. That's what I use when I sponsor people. Let me tell you real quick about my kids, because it's 8 o'clock, and if y'all will bear with me, I want to share real quick about my children. I have a daughter who's 33 years old. And we actually introduced her to a guy that we know in AA. Now, that's an insane thought if you think about it. But he's a doll. We met him and just said, oh, my gosh. I mean, we both, Dennis and I, were like, man, they would be so good. And they did. They hit it off. And I really think they're going to have a future together. They've been together a couple years, and he's just like part of the family. But she's this girl. I mean, when she was 11 years old, she had saved her money from babysitting. And she remember when I was a single mom for 10 years, and she remembers me. I pinned my bra together, pinned my slips together, things like that, because I wanted to save my money for them. You know, self-supporting is one of the first traditions that I learned about in sobriety, because I wanted to be self-supporting. I have parents that could have helped me, you know, paid for all of it. And I didn't want that. I mean, I've let them be grandparents, don't get me wrong, but I needed to do it. It was important to me, because I had leaned on them so much. And she, bless her heart, yeah, that little girl bought me a brand new bra. And I just was so touched by that. And, you know, what a sweet girl at 11 years old. She's recognizing that about her mom. And she used to hang her picture up, my picture up in her room, and she'd say, Mom, I want to be just like you. I just want to be just like you. And we're the great friends. I mean, I was just so moved by that growing up, that, you know, that she wanted to be like her mother, you know. And that's because of you. You know, that's not me. That's you. You know, that's this life we live, you know. And my son, Justin, he went through some times when he was a teenager. And you shared your experiences with your kids. And I didn't jump to conclusions and think, oh, my God, he's alcoholic. He's got to go to AA. He went through a bunch of teenage stuff. Now, whether he ends up here later or not, I don't know. But he's fine. He's a very successful young man. He called me one night and knew he was going to ask his girl to marry him. He said, Mom, I want to tell you about tonight. And he had rented a limo and done all this fanciness. And he said, I started crying when I was talking to her. And he said, and then I asked her to marry me. And he said, and I just wanted to call and tell you and thank you for helping me be a man that she would want to marry. And so, you know, I tell you, that's you again, and I thank you for that. And then my baby, who just turned 30, he's in fourth grade. I always tell this story. He gets sick of me telling it, but I think it's cute. But it's very touching. He was 10 years old, fourth grade, and one of the little boys on the playground wet his pants. And most kids would be teasing and all, because, you know, kids can be cruel. I know. I have freckles, and kids used to tease me when I was a kid, and I know how that feels, you know. So he ran in and got help. And his teacher called me that night. He said, I just got to share this with you. That, you know, that kids just don't do that. And I was just so touched by that. And I was like, wow, that's you. God is always sending me postcards. Yeah. Let me know I'm on track. okay? And he had a girl like him about a year ago. And tell me this isn't healthy, and I know this ain't me. And she liked him more, and he liked her. And he said, "Mama, I just told her I just didn't want to see her." He said, "It's not right to lead her on." I'm going, "Wow, that is not me." And so I'm like, "Wow, that's healthy." You know, and I was like, "That's y'all." And so what we do, my point in sharing the stories, and there are many of them because I'm very close to them. My point in sharing the stories are, we don't know who's watching. We don't know how we impact people. We used to impact people negatively. Now we impact them positively. You know, because of the transformation that happens here is the 12 steps. And using the 12 traditions and the 12 concepts, and if you get into service, you'll understand those concepts, even though they sound like Chinese right now. Get involved and they'll make sense. But using these spiritual principles in our lives, we affect people in a very positive way. And we share this gift. And we don't lose our gratitude. And I came into this program with a lot of hate in my heart for their father because he's never really been in their lives. And through this process, I have nothing but love for him. He's one of our wounded. You know, and Dennis and I have reached our hand out to him and said, if you need any help, let us know. Half of his heart is gone because he got so caught up in a crack addiction. He couldn't be there for the kids. You know, I have no bad feelings toward him. If he needs our help, I told him, I said, we'll include you when the grandkids come and everything. I said, and that's y'all. That's, you know, I don't need hate in my heart. You know, I can't survive with hate in my heart. You know, pride, fear, anger, that stuff, if you've got that there can be no unity. And so that's things I learned from you. And that's what I share wherever I go. If you're new, hang in there. I'm telling you. If you're not new, hang in there. I'm telling you. Because God's got the plan. If I had left, I would have missed so many gifts and so many dreams. I've got to shut up because I've got so many things I could share with you. Things that have happened in my life as a direct result of showing up, being willing to do this deal, being inconvenienced, answering the phone no matter what time it is, reaching my hand out. If you give your phone number out, don't give it out unless you're willing to call back or answer the phone. You know, giving rides, staying after the meeting and talking to somebody, even though I really want to go home and watch American Idol, and, you know, that kind of thing. Don't, you know, just put taking me out of the equation and actually doing this thing and doing God's work for God's kids. Man, amazing things happen. I'm telling you. And the highest you get here is sober.
That's right.
You know, it's a level playing field. It's just, we're all in this thing together. So thank you for allowing me to share my experience, strength, and hope. So I wish I had more time to share, but I don't.
Ah, that was wonderful. We are going to pass the seventh tradition basket. Does anybody know where that is?
It's right there. It's going around.
We got it already? The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. The Simple Actions Group is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting, home group members. There's literature available, and in AA, sponsorship is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. See how we do that, the newcomers and then the sponsorship thing?
Just
deliberate. I just want to thank you all. We're normally in the larger area across the hall, and that's where we'll be next week. The church was closed for Easter, so I appreciate everybody's patience in adapting to this this space, and thank the home group members who gracefully went out into the hall so that you could have a seat in here. After we clean up, we're going to stack the chairs in the back about 5 or 6 high. And thanks again to Christy for a wonderful story. Liam, would you read the last 2 paragraphs on page 164? Would the AA with the 9-year birthday on this very day lead us in the Lord's Prayer?
7.
Can we have a moment of silence for those suffering in and out of these rooms? Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Amen.
Keep coming back. It works if you work it. It won't if you don't.
Yeah. Woo.